everybody, welcome to a very special episode of But Why Though the Podcast. Today we are interviewing Julio Macias. As always, I'm your host Kate. I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up, guys?
Thank you so much, Julio. If you're listening and you don't know who he is, shame on you, because you should. He plays Spooky on My Block on Netflix, an amazing coming of age show.
And it's a blast being on there.
Yeah, if you don't know who Julio is and you follow Kate on any social media, do you really even listen to our podcast?
Or do you really follow me on social media? I'm pretty sure as I binge season two, I just took different... I'm sorry, this is going to sound a little bit weird. I just took different screenshots and I was like, this is why Spooky's the best. This is why Spooky's the best.
Super cool. Now we're all little gifts and little little things that you can send. That's fun. That's interesting.
I did notice that you all got a whole bunch of where it's just you and like a colored background.
Yeah.
Do you use your own GIFs frequently?
I do. I set them up, but then I don't send them. I'm like, I can't do it. Like I'll do it to like my sister or something between like a private message, but I can't do it, you know, on a wider audience.
Oh man, if I had GIFs of me, I'd be sending them left and right.
The first thing I have to ask is, what drew you to the role of, you know, Oscar / Spooky?
I guess first was just the opportunity to audition and get a job, you know. But then once I read the sides, you know, aside from a lot of ways that, you know, people in that life are portrayed, immediately the first scene that I read was the beach scene. That was my audition scene with my brother. The way that it was written, it was a lot much longer speech than what was ended up being in the first season. But it hit me like, yo, there's so much underneath, and I haven't seen too much of that on, not that I necessarily cater my viewing audience to watch a lot of performances on that. So there might be other things out there, but not that I've seen, I guess everywhere. So I said, I'd like to give this a try. And the fact that Lauren and Netflix and people have trusted me with it is a huge honor and also really cool.
Yeah, I mean, you first and foremost, like, you kill it. Like, you do a fantastic job in the role. And since you're kind of playing, I don't know, do you see Oscar and Spooky as two different characters that you play? Or do you just approach them as like, hey, this is the same guy and this is who he is?
I think it's, you know, it's the flip side of the coin. You know, it definitely is the same person. However, just the psychology of Batman, because Spooky's not Batman, but it's the same idea of what is real now. Who's the actual person? Is it Oscar? Is it Spooky? And what I love about the second season is that it kind of seemed like, for a lot of people, it seemed like maybe Oscar wasn't the real person. Spooky was just everything behind him manipulating his brother. What you see in the second season is that might not necessarily be true. You know, what I keep talking about is that the kids that Caesar grew up with, they all saw Oscar before he was Spooky, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that you see a little bit trickling that out in the second season, which is, he's still scary. He's still a little bit intimidating to approach. But they're like, hey, man, we remember when you were a kid. All right. Just so I think that's interesting. And they are the same side of the same coin. All right. So two different sides of the same coin.
Yeah. And it's really amazing to hear you talk about him, and specifically talking about the beach scene, because one, I cried like a baby at that scene. but also, a lot of people have been drawn to the show for being one of, if not the first, to portray like a coming of age story, like specifically for brown and black kids in a community like Free Ridge. And for me personally, like I knew guys who were Spooky, you know, like, and I didn't know them as Oscar, and I knew that life. Mm-hmm. So why do you think that the show and its heart and your character and, you know, everything about it, why do you think that resonates with so many viewers? Because, I mean, it has so much support on social media, which I love seeing. But, you know, why do you think it's that way?
The word that I wasn't, you know, I didn't see myself growing up in a lot of roles. That wasn't necessarily my case. I was, you know, I was born in Mexico City, so the movies that I saw were, you know, filled with Mexicans. So that wasn't necessarily my experience or my case when I first grew up. However, there was a huge cultural shift, you know, when I first moved here, 7 years old, consciously moved here, because, you know, I bounced back and forth between Mexico City and LA. But when I first moved here, and, you know, being 7 years old, I really did see that, oh, okay, like, we always take the backseat on this. Okay, cool, cool, cool. Mm-hmm. As an actor, all I wanted to do was to play. So it never bugged me. And even when I first got to read for Oscar, like, it didn't bug me that I had to read for a gangbanger. It was just an opportunity for me to act. It wasn't until the show came out that I was even just, you know, shocked at the support. And then with when I started reading the comments, the need for a show like this, I was, you know, I'm a part of it, and I'm learning how important it is, because you know, Jessica, who's one of my closest friends now, who's also on the show, she talks about how this was needed and how this was this. And it wasn't until I was in this position of where I'm telling that story that I see how important and how relevant it has become. What I think is really cool about it is that it tells a story. Yes, there's dark. Yes, there's danger, but in a fun way. I mean, this show is really funny. The characters, the actors are great comedians, and just actors in the sense that they can bring it back. You know, they can tackle the big issues, and then they can rail it in with, or bring it in with, the reality of what it is to be kid almost anywhere. You know.
Yeah, that was one of the things. I think I had a friend ask me to describe the show, because I was trying to get her to watch it. I was like, well, it's like the Goonies meets like Chicano cinema, and that's what you got.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, beyond that too, like, I have seen some people raise some concerns about having so much of, you know, having a lot of gang life kind of like shown in the show. But for me, when I reviewed season two, and one of the things that I mentioned was, like, Spooky's so much more than just a cholo, right? Like, he's a lot more than just this one-dimensional character that we get a lot of. What do you think, like, what do you do, or what do you think the showrunners do to really make sure that Spooky doesn't end up being like a stereotype, right? That he's a full character.
Yeah. Well, first, you know, I think that they actually use both the gang life and Spooky sparingly, if not like a precision knife, put them in when they need to, without just flashing it. And it's not necessarily a gang show, so it's, mm-hmm. I don't think there's no need for an entire episode of the Santos. And yeah. I mean, I'd have a lot of fun filming it for sure, but yeah, you know, it doesn't necessarily add to the story. What Eddie, Jeremy, and Lauren do is not only do their research, but talk to everybody. You know, there isn't anything that they've asked me necessarily that I think influenced Spooky, but they'll come up to us and ask about immigrations, and what's my point of view as an immigrant, and what's my point of view of it as an American, and then as like a Mexican, and then we'll have these conversations, and then they inform themselves through conversations without necessarily asking what should we put in the show. And their own sensibilities really come out when they start writing it. You see how they are paying attention, you know. And then obviously the writer's room is filled with people who've come from those places and who want to explore those situations, but also attract people to those topics, which you need to, I guess, flash up certain things so that people will pay attention to what you're saying in the subtext.
Man, that's such a great answer.
Yeah, that was everything I wanted in that answer. I guess for me, so like Kate was saying, I also grew up in a predominantly, you know, brown community in El Paso, and I lived on the not so great side of El Paso, and I had friends who were in gangs, I had cousins who were in gangs, and things like that. So watching you play Spooky really resonates with me, with like a lot of the people that I grew up around, and like I felt like you felt that. Like, do you pull any of your experiences with, you know, that lifestyle, or like things that you grew up around, outside of just being an immigrant, but to really like nail down those, you know, mannerisms and all those things from Spooky?
I would say I approached this role with the utmost respect for not only Spooky but that community. To say that I'm Mexican and say that's a blanket statement of saying how I understand every single Mexican's experience, it's just not true. However, I was exposed from a young age in being in Mexico City, seeing good people do not necessarily criminal or bad things, but questionable things to be on the up and up. And when they didn't do it, they got screwed over in return. So the idea of black and white morality was always very present to me. When my parents, the last straw of when my parents brought us here is our car got taken away. And there was a kill switch that my dad hadn't turned on, so they came back and essentially kidnapped my dad for I'm saying a couple hours, and he came back, and that was the last straw. My parents had this conversation, but when I remember it as a kid, I remember the assaulters saying, "Por favor, señora, por aquí," like helping us out of the car, being polite, the hiding the guns from the kids. And I'm not saying that what they did was right, and maybe my memory of it just was distorted, but that always stayed with me. I said, these were people that pointed guns at my family and scared the living crap out of my dad and my mom enough to leave the country that they were born and love. But for some reason, they didn't seem like bad people. And as I grew up, I understood all these subtle differences, and then when I had the opportunity to play this character, I never grew up around gangs, but you were never too far away. Whenever you would drive, especially you speaking Spanish, you end up hanging out and talking to people, and then you find out, oh, that, oh, okay, cool, whatever. It's a passing thing that if it's not brought up and you're not in any kind of actual danger, you can completely overlook, and so. Yeah, I guess it was just that. I didn't want to do anything that was a caricature. And if at any point I saw that anybody was looking at me like I was acting a fool, I would bring it back or I would try something different. But yeah, it was just respect. That was pretty much my biggest thing when approaching Spooky.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's a really, really powerful story, Julio. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I never thought you were a caricature at any point during the show. So.
Cool. Then that's good. Then I did my job, I guess.
I mean, and that was something that I really love about that was something that I really love about the way the show and specifically you kind of portray this identity, because it's one of those things where, like, when I grew up, like, we grew up in a segment of San Antonio that, like, the reason they had a gang unit was because of, like, the neighborhood I was from. But, like, growing up, like, I still felt safe there, which is a weird thing to say. Like, there were curfews and stuff, but, like, my family rarely locked their cars. We'd run out to the ice cream man in the middle of the street. Like, my grand, like, they it, it's weird to say, like, to, like, put in perspective, like, my mom had walked outside pregnant with me and, like, yelled at one of the cholos that she was gonna shove the horn up, if they kept honking, because she hadn't slept in 2 days. And he said, "I'm sorry, ma'am," and, like, took the car away and didn't do anything. And my grandpa was, like, freaking out, and my mom kind of used it as a way to be like, "Hey, like, these people are bad, but, there's a level of respect." And I think that a lot of the times in shows and movies and in how even how people portray, cholos or even just, like, gang life in general, like, they kind of miss the nuance and the life and the relationships that get built between them and the community. And seeing, especially in season 2, where Spooky just really steps up and he has that conversation with Ruby where he says, "Hey, that's privilege there, right? Like, you have a mom and dad to go back to, and you're forgetting that I'm defending this community. I'm the one who
Well,
made this
yeah.
truce and everything." And I think, like, seeing that side of him is it's like a breath of fresh air and just amazing to see, because that's how life is. Like, there are people living that way. Like, how specifically with the scenes with Rubies, because Spooky really takes him under his wing in season 2. Like, how were filming those scenes? Like, what did you bring to them, really?
Yeah, I Well, what I brought the voice, but the writing was, all came from Jeremy, Eddie, and Lauren. I mean, these guys, they really craft their words, and we try not to. We'll accidentally flip an A or to an or something here or there, but we really do try to stick to the script. What I really enjoy about that scene, my mom studied anthropology in Mexico, and she always was showing me the differences in socioeconomic issues in Mexico, and what I saw is just how you, the same way that you never think it's going to stop up, like people somehow get richer and richer and have bigger and bigger, more and more and more power, and it almost seems endless because someone has a boss and someone and that boss has a boss. It also goes down the other way. Ruby, they make fun of, and there is that privilege that's over in Brentwood, and they're making fun of these girls, but then they come back to their hood, and then they're just like, him and Jamal are definitely in the higher socioeconomic status of that neighborhood, So that prejudice does trickle down, and guess what? It even goes further down. Like I was saying, just because I'm Mexican, I can't speak to every single Mexican experience. What we saw right now with Yalitza coming up, the way that she did, and everybody's like, "Wow, that story is never told." I watched that movie with my parents, and even though they were amazed with the cinematography and the story hits us as younger and millennials, my parents are like, "Yeah, that's the story for sure. That is what where we grew up, and that's what it still exists." You think that showing this movie right now changed all of that? No, absolutely not. It's prevalent. It's rampant throughout Mexico. And if you want to change, let's and I hate to just categorize because Hispanics is because we do different races are prejudiced towards others for some reason or another, and it's not just one color against another. But we need to fix that within our own Hispanic communities. Stop that disparagement before we can ask others to say involve us equally in theirs, which they should, which they should.
No, I mean it's amazing hearing you talk about that and say it, because that's also one of the reasons that has been really great about On My Block is showing like this multitude of Latino experiences, right? Like they're not all the same type of kid. Monse is an Afro Latina. Like that's really important, especially with the stuff we have going on in our within the Mexican American community and within the Mexican communities. Like that's definitely really, really big. Like when you look at the show and the cast, like I know that like a lot of people will probably say, "Oh, well, it's not really diverse, right? It's just a whole, it's just brown kids." And it's like, well, no, like from
it's
your
every
perspective,
shade of brown.
I guess like were there any like really hard, hard scenes for you to film? Whether like emotionally or just, nailing the lines or, was there ever a time that you had a hard time delivering a scene and, what was that about?
Yes, it was more of again, not wanting to overdo anything. I always try to keep always try to hold back unless there's a scene, and I hope that if we get a season three, like there's just one scene that shows the dark side of Spooky, just because I think we've seen him bark enough, like to see him bite. But that's just me, the actor, saying that that would be fun. But it should be once, and it should be kind of scary and very brutal. And oh yeah, no, that's not okay. That whatever else he was preaching, that amount of violence is not okay. So there was a couple of scenes where, not that I physically needed to go there, but the attitude and the intensity of what I was going for came from behind there. And the same way, I didn't want to lose the cadence. I didn't want to lose the energy. I didn't want to lose the reality of who Spooky was, and maybe just screaming or making it seem like I didn't want it, a caricature. But that was just me not trusting the work that I had done, and the trusting the rest of the team. And Lauren just pulled me aside. He's like, "Hey, Julio, I don't need you to be nice right now. I don't need you to be cordial. I don't need you to be try to understand this. I need you to think like understand me that right now behind the camera as your director, I need you to go here and you gotta trust me." And so I did. And then when I watch it, I'm like, you know what, Lauren, I'm just gonna shut my mouth next time that goes down.
Which scene was that?
This there was two. It was when Caesar comes in and asks for help at the last minute, you know?
Oh.
I kind of wanted just to like lightly brush him off, and she's
Yeah.
like, "You understand how painful it is for you?" And obviously, by the second scene, by the second take, I was just like, "Oh my God, I do!" Like, this is the
Yeah.
reason that I'm attacking him isn't because I want to hurt him, it's because I want to hurt myself for pushing him that far away. But you know, he's the punching bag that's
Yeah.
in front of me. So that scene and the cooking scene with Jason, the way that I read it, I wanted to be more conversational and having like a beer conversation, like talking about this. And then Lauren and Jeremy are like, nah, no, 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 no. And then that's when they explained to me the double side of the prejudice that they had written in from Brentwood down to Free Ridge, and then even within Free Ridge further down the line,
Yeah.
or further, let's say, horizontally across the board instead of down the line.
Well, I will say you acted the hell out of those scenes, and I felt them in my heart.
Cool,
Yeah, the whole time you're saying that, I was like, I hope it's those scenes. I hope it's those scenes because that's all I'm picturing. So, in that same vein, so you said you spoke that the scene with Ruby was like very an impactful scene, an important scene, kind of culturally and things like that. It just from listening to you talk about the cast as well as like the production crew, you guys seem very tight knit. Like, do you have like a favorite moment on set that doesn't even have to be like filming wise, but just kind of that shows like how tight knit you guys are?
Yes. I would say that the fact that all of the cast at one point or another has lived in my house now in the last 2 years. No, I you know someone had asked me what was the biggest privilege, what was the best part about the show, and you know I said obviously the chance of a director and a network taking a chance on you, letting you play a character, because a lot of times we as actors we get cast as whatever we are. You know, I'm proud to say that I work my ass off to become Spooky, but there's a lot of him that's not me. So for them to have trust me with that was like a huge honor, and I didn't take it lightly, and I enjoyed every single moment of it as an actor. But the best part about it was meeting this cast. Like, they're my family now. They're my friends. They're that group of hardworking people in this industry in Los Angeles that sometimes it can become, and not, I love this city, and I love this town, and I love this game, and I know that a lot of facade comes along with it, but it's when you find genuine people that want to be around you because they love you, man, you hold that tight. So I think just the fact that they were able to open up to me very early on, and the reason that I think Spooky is very spooky on screen isn't so like I bring it. I bring, I don't know, 50%, and then they got to give me the other. They got to give me that power. So I thank them every single time that I go on screen, and they're like, "Ooh," because I mean, if I were to scream at them in real life, they'd be like, "Shoot, Julio, shut up, man, shut up."
I do have to ask a question, one, I love listening to you talk, and I hope you get casted in like everything. I mean, I have fan casted you as Jaime Reyes, the Blue Beetle, just saying.
Yo! Oh my God! Huge, huge comic book fan. So I would
Oh,
love to play
that's
the Blue Beetle.
amazing. I'm a huge comic fan.
I'm about it.
Oh,
Yeah.
see, I will start that petition right now because one, we need Jaime,
Yeah.
and two, you'd be perfect.
I mean, what was Robbie Reyes? I mean, they are. I know they just did him right now
Oh,
on
yeah.
Shield, but he could. They could do a younger film of that guy, you know.
I think he
Let's do
deserves it. Like Robbie Reyes is amazing. Oh, that I need it to happen.
it.
And either of them, honestly. Honestly on Twitter, I'm just like fan casting different types of Mexican heroes. Like, get them out there. Get this one out there. We got this one. So, like, kind of speaking about that, and it's one of the things that I always worry about when I find an actor, specifically a Latino actor, or Mexican American actor, or Mexican actor that I find that I like, that I love watching, and I want them to get more work. Are you worried that having played Spooky, having played a Cholo, like, are you worried about getting typecasted as that?
Not really, because I never thought that I would have gotten cast as Spooky in the first place. It wasn't my aspiration is to play interesting and unique characters. I'll 100 take the percent take the back seat for the really cool sidekick over just the let's call it. I hate there's all these expressions like plain Jane, assuming that a Jane would be plain. But just like a base white page character that is supposed to be the shining armor guy. I'd rather be either the villain or the shining guy's best friend. I don't know, those characters attract me. So the need or necessity to reach the top is really just reach my own personal top. If I auditioned for so many other Cholo, let's call them Cholo roles, after On My Block that I haven't booked, so I'm not really worried about being typecast as.
So part of me is like, I'm really glad to hear that. But the other part is
Yeah,
like, damn, but you're a real good Cholo too.
I was like, but why didn't they though? Did they not see your
Was
amazing
like, did they
potential?
not see this amazing season? Well, I do have to ask, so since you're a comic fan and you, like I'm a huge comic nerd, like I review DC comics and stuff on our site and everything, like if there is, with the superhero universe is expanding and getting more movies and shows, like is there one that you want to see happen live action and that you want to play?
Oh
Like
man.
any of them.
Bong. Machete. No, Masacre. Masacre, pardon, Machete. Masacre. Masacre. Masacre is essentially, I would say that he's Mexico's Punisher who took Deadpool as his idol. And if you don't know who he is, please go look him up. He speaks in he only speaks in Spanish, and he speaks a little bit soliloquy-ish, sort of Don Quixote-esque. So the same way that Deadpool distracts his I guess victims by just constantly talking, and it's like shut up, shut up, shut up, bang. This guy does it too, but Shakespeareanly speaking in Spanish. He doesn't have any regenerative powers. It's just something tragic happened to his family. He found this Deadpool pajama thingy. I mean, that's how I imagined it, because they don't explain it. He found like this Deadpool costume and then put on boards on top of that for protection, and then just goes in there. So Masacre, I would love to play Masacre.
That is amazing, and I actually feel horrible for having never heard of him.
He has one standalone, and then in Mercs for Money, which I think was
Ah,
two
there we
years ago.
go. Okay. That's really cool.
Yeah, so probably that.
That sounds amazing. So like one of gosh. Man, I just want to ask you like a whole bunch of nerdy
Go for it. I pulled that one out of my sleeve because I was trying to think of this other human, but I couldn't think of his name or his inhuman name. So I was just like, no, Masacre. Come on, Julia, let's go this way.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I want you to play him because you're so passionate about
I
it.
know.
I'm personally interested to hear what other like pop culture-y nerdy stuff, because that's basically our brand, right? That's all we kind of talk about, like Star Wars and anime and professional wrestling and
Yeah.
video games, everything in between. Other than comic books, is there anything else that fans might not know that you enjoy if they only know you as Spooky?
I like doing voices. I'm starting this. Well, I got asked to be part of this pitch. They're pitching this cartoon, and they needed a grandpa, and they brought me in. And I was like, guys, I love you, but I'm they're like, no, man. Like, the thing is that this is a cartoon, grandpa. And we need more of an act. Like, we need the action more than the voice of a grandfather. So we messed around for a little bit, and I ended up staying, and they recorded the voices, and it was so much fun. So yeah, I really like involving myself in different projects all all throughout. People keep asking me what my hobbies are, and I'm like, producing. I produce little shorts and sketches, and I don't do anything. Sometimes I surf when I have time, but other than that, I'm constantly creating or jumping on different, random little projects here and there. And I hope this one comes out because,
let's see. I do kind of like a voice like this, and it's, hey, I'm just sitting clean. I'm going to be the first man with over 60 million views with 60 años más para arriba, okay? So that's
Oh my God. Oh, that is so good.
deceased.
So I hope that that goes through because I would love to just I would love for my two biggest things right now on IMDb to be Spooky and then Grandpa. Abuelo Papo.
Oh yeah, love it.
Oh gosh, I love that so much. I do have to ask, do you have a favorite comic series right now? I know you said you're busy producing and stuff, but like, are you reading comics right now?
I will pull up my Marvel app right now and tell you. I've been enjoying the new Hulk series,
Ooh.
the Immortal Hulk. That's all great. It's very horror-y. Like it kind of reads like a horror thing.
Yeah.
The Invaders, I'm figuring out right now. I'm getting into War Realms. I do a lot more Marvel.
Okay,
I'm
cool.
trying to get into the Batman That Laughs right
That
now.
one's actually really so I so we Marvel doesn't give review copies to press sites. So I've started reading a lot more DC, and I will say the Batman Who Laughs is like if you like horror stuff, oh my God, pick it up. It's yeah, it's so good, and it just gets better.
I also, and I know that it's a little bit off, but I ate up Injustice. I ate it
I
up. It
did
was the
too.
cheapest little, it was the cheapest one that I could get on the app. So I just kept buying like the next one, 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 the next one. I'm like, ah, this is so interesting.
It's really good, and it gets real
Yeah.
dark.
It does. It does. I halfway through Injustice 2, I was like, okay, I get it. You're gonna kill everybody, aren't you? All right. I'm just gonna stop.
I will say there is a new series coming out from Tom Taylor called Deceased. I don't know if you've heard about
Yes.
that. Yeah.
Yes.
Kind
Okay.
of like Marvel Zombies, but not, I hope.
We'll see. I don't know. I like Marvel Zombies, but the animation or the drawing and the stenciling, I suppose,
Yeah.
sometimes bugged me. I was just
Yeah,
like, this.
I think it's because of just the like I think sometimes people overdo zombies. But the covers have looked really good. I mean, it also has like 12 variant covers now,
Exactly.
but Oh, awesome. Well, I don't want to keep you any longer, but like I
I
also want to
got
talk with you about comics.
Can, since we're so close, and I gotta ask, Julio, what are your what's your end game predictions?
What's my end game predictions?
Avengers
Yeah,
Endgame.
oh, end game. I was like,
Yeah.
end game, bro. I just started.
Yeah.
End Grandpa,
game.
that's it. I was cutting it after that.
I hope that there will be some ending sacrifices. I hope that they close the cycle as much as I would love to continue to watch our original Avengers continue. That's just not how it is, and that's not how it works. And
Yeah.
we can't be super excited about a reunion if they never break up or if they never die. So I think I'd like to see them wrap up something like that. And I think that the Eternals are going to show up at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I like it.
Think the Eternals are going to come into play. I don't know if maybe Adam Warlock. Or
They
maybe.
introduced Adam, didn't they, in Guardians 2, kind of?
Yeah, so I think I but I think it's going to be like they're going to try this way, that way, hey, like Particle Town, and then
Yeah.
just ooh, like higher powers gonna be like, all right, guys, all right, you guys are going way too many in too many circles. Let's just do this. Here we go. You want him dead? He's dead. You want them back? They're back. It'll be a cop out, but I'll cry and I'll love it as long as a couple of them don't come back.
Fair. I think everybody's money right now is between Tony and Cap.
I mean, is it horrible to say that if they both bounce? Like, obviously, no one wants to not watch them play again, but that wouldn't that be just poetic?
It would be extremely poetic. I am going to cry like a baby. Like, I cried knowing that Tom Holland was still coming back for the next Spider-Man, but I still cried.
Oh, yeah, like, but all of those guys.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it's also, too, like, you have both Sam and Bucky who are around who have both had the shield in their own respective comics. So, and they're going to get their own Disney Plus show. I mean, it kind of makes sense that Cap is, although, like, I never used to be a Captain America fan, and then the MCU made me one, so I'm like, please don't take him away.
I became a Captain America fan in the first Civil War series. In comic books. It was just like, Tony, back up.
Yeah. That was, that's one of the things, it actually ends up being like a huge debate on the podcast whenever it comes up, because we've covered a lot of the characters by themselves. Like, we covered Captain America and Thor, Black Panther, Iron Man and stuff. And it's always like, Adrian is Team Iron Man. Sorry to throw you under the bus. but like...
hold on, let me defend Team Iron Man in the MCU.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's definitely wrong in the comics.
But like, it's one of those things that, like, our other host Matt, who isn't here, me and him are always just like, we really don't like Captain America, but you can't not like Captain America in Civil War because he's the only right one.
Oh, until you get to the stuff now with Captain Hydra.
Oh,
I thought that
God.
That was...
I did not finish reading that series after that reveal. And I heard that I should have, but it was too hard to see him as Hydra. Like, it just didn't make any sense.
What was great about that whole thing is that they haven't walked it back. That's Captain... That is the original Captain America.
They leaned all the way in.
Who switched? And he's the whole thing, he's like, I didn't even switch. It's about order. And then you talk and you think about what Captain America was preaching during the World War II days, and you're like, yeah, that's what he was preaching. Damn. Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's great because it makes you think. You know, it allows us to tackle bigger issues in a fun way, so we can think about it with hating fictional characters and trying to understand them instead of putting it out there to the world. But we should put it out to the world.
So one last question on the Infinity War, or on the Endgame, on the Endgame channel. What do you think comes next? So we know that Shang-Chi and the Eternals have been announced, but we don't have anything else. Who do you think, like, or who would you like to see, you know, new Avengers come in, or, you know, new franchises come in, or anything like that?
I don't know. I'd like to see the new Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. I'd also like it to maybe go back to smaller characters and create new adventures in the cinematic universe instead of trying to go back and find another comic to retell.
Yeah.
So I think that would be kind of cool. But I don't know. I don't know. I'm really bad at predicting things. I just, let them happen.
Okay. I mean, thank you so much for talking with us about Spooky, geeking out with us. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on the interwebs or anything like that?
You can follow me on both Twitter and Instagram at A Julio Macias, because I'm just one of many. And that's it.
And everybody who's listening, if you have not watched On My Block yet, you obviously didn't listen to my tweets, so go watch it now. You can find the podcast at But Why Though PC on all things social media, and you can find me at Oh My Myth Randier on Twitter. Adrian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperReese93, SuperRuiz93.
Cool. And that's it. Thank you so much, Julio. That was amazing. That was so much fun.
No, thank you guys. That was a blast.